Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Yahoo Finance presents It's a Jungle Out There, the podcast where we take a wild approach to work and management.
The sound of a queen bee piping, a battle cry to any other queen bees in the hive to clear out. I'm Leanna Brinded, head of Yahoo Finance UK. We've seen progress in the field of women in leadership, but queen bee syndrome is still used to describe a style of female leadership that suppresses the rise of female colleagues. I may have broken the glass ceiling, but I'm not going to let anyone else through. Is the picture really that one-dimensional, or are there also other benefits to the queen bee mentality? Hello and welcome to this week's episode. Joining me today is Jana Koja-Bachelot-Hilmer, and she is the Senior Lecturer, Department of Management Director at CAS Global Women's Leadership Programme. And also joining me is Sinead Bunting. She's the Vice President of Marketing in Europe at monster.co.uk. So hi, welcome guys.
Hello.
Nice to have you. So this week we've got a very juicy topic. We're talking about bees, and actually more specifically, the role of a queen bee. So every hive has one, a well-run colony needs one. But what would you say is the definition of queen bee in the workplace? Is it actually positive?
I think we can all agree that it's not seen as very positive. And the implications are that it's a woman who doesn't help other women and feels a bit threatened and has an army of men workers and it's rare for her to have another female in the team. That's my understanding of it, so not, you know, necessarily very positive.
I would agree with that. I think it's rather negative, and it is the woman who is alone there at the top and is trying to protect that space at any cost. That's usually what people think about when we talk about queen bees.
Yeah, I mean, when I think about it, my instant thing is I think of those, you know, especially when I was younger, the, you know, women in the 80s with the big power suits, be as aggressive as guys, would be that one woman in power, but it was, you know, pretty nasty. but have we, to me, it seems that we have got, I suppose, further away from that stereotype, have we at all? Or is it just in a different kind of fashion sense, I suppose?
I think we have moved away a little bit. First of all, we do have more women at the top than the 80s, so we have more role models and therefore more variety. But the phenomenon of the queen bee hasn't really disappeared. It's still quite prevalent. People understand what that means. So I guess we still are grappling with the issue of why is it really happening?
Yeah, I think it's a lot less as well. And as it was said there, it's a case of there's more women there. And I think that the premise of the queen bee, thinking of why it is there, is this insecurity. And to me, it's like one in, one out. And that's the whole kind of thing, is that there can only be one woman. And in business, there is only typically one woman on the boardroom, if even, or one woman in the team, and that token woman. So to protect her, you know, her kind of position, whenever there's only allowed one, which is kind of what was the situation, then that was why they behave that way, because they're insecure. Because if I let you in, then I'm going to be getting, you know, taken out. So if you have more women, that whole kind of scenario dilutes, and it's not necessarily so strong.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point, because there have been those studies out there that have shown that usually women who end up being promoted or get into a senior management position or a board position only ends up getting it by replacing a woman that was there in the first place. So it's much more of this revolving door. Mm-hmm. And that in itself does, I suppose, inwardly for that person, make them a bit more cagey about it. But has that, you know, is that getting any better? I mean, surely we have seen some growth in terms of those boardroom numbers, those women at the top in terms of, you know, leadership programs. Have you been seeing that actually come into fruition?
There does seem to be some evidence that the number of women in boards is increasing, but we certainly haven't reached a tipping point. It's still a very small subset of organizations that get there. For me, the irony of it all is if you have a single woman on your board for diversity, you are actually drowning that woman's voice. We know that if you're a single person who represents a certain segment, you're not heard at all. So if, you know, your logic is that, well, we need more women to increase our diversity, and then you have this poor woman sitting on the board alone, most likely, actually, her point is not getting across, or men take over those points and run with it. You see all kinds of implications. So it is getting slightly better. It should get better for a business sense, too, but it's not definitely prevalent.
Yeah, and I think there's been a lot of work done. And, you know, I think it's really important to identify progress and celebrate that, you know, and see the positives. Things have got better. But in terms of, you know, equal pay and senior representation on the boards, there's still a lot of work to do. I know that there's the 30% club, you know? Yeah. And I think I saw a couple of weeks ago that they have reached their kind of objective. But my understanding is a lot of those, board level positions are NEDs, so non-executive directors. So whilst it's still really good, you want the actual kind of positions on the board to be women doing the stuff and being responsible and having real kind of authority to kind of change that organisation and drive success. So lots of progress, but lots still to do.
So what I find really interesting, trying to unpack this, and it is a subject that I've looked in before, because we've all had those bosses, whether it's like a male boss, but also like women's boss. The fact that there's a queen bee analogy that is out there, we don't really have one for men, because there does seem to be this focus that especially if a woman boss is very stern or very direct, or, you know, again, that would be seen as a negative thing, whereas men, it's more, you're more assertive, you're more go-getting, you really, you know, get stuff done. So what are the kind of areas that are still maybe like, whether it's microaggressions or whether it's smaller things that enables this kind of mentality, this kind of nature within a woman when they rise up to foster?
Yeah, an area that kind of fascinates me is around this whole theory of, you know, confidence and the confidence gap. And I think that, you know, women do suffer from, you know, a lack of confidence. And that's for a variety of reasons. It's the fact that, you know, from a young age, you're told to follow the rules, not show off, kind of, you know, be a good girl. And then if you are kind of, there's only one of you on the board or on a team or a couple of you, then you don't have that confidence that men have to kind of, you know, you don't feel as threatened, you don't feel as insecure. So maybe that is kind of why some women kind of do behave in a more kind of, I don't think it's more aggressive. I think the fact is they act similar to men, but because it's a woman and she's exhibiting traits that aren't necessarily feminine, then it's seen as, you know, stronger, when in fact, I don't think she's maybe, you know, acting any more assertive or aggressive than a man. It's just frowned upon more. So it's the kind of fine line between being confident as a woman, but how you exhibit that confidence isn't sadly, you know, welcomed as much as a man. For a man, it's normal. It's to be applauded. He's the leader. For a woman, it's, oh, here we go again. Someone's being a bitch.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, what would women do in that situation, though? Because there is that conflict that, like I was saying, the woman's voice gets drowned out in that being on that one person on the board. But at the same time, if you're too confident and you lean in, I'm using air quotes, by the way, listeners, too much, it's then negative as well. What would the advice be in this situation?
Well, I think that's why it's really important to step away from what the women could or should do and say what the organization could or should do. Because a lot of this is really around how the organization defined leadership in the first place. Most likely they used a lot of very masculine traits in defining their leaders. And then they asked women as they went up the ladder to be not feminine. They would actually probably be they were being penalized for being feminine at times. And then just when you get at the top, you almost now say, well, yes, but now I want you to be show feminine behavior again. So I think it's a really fundamental issue of how do you define leadership in your organization. Another thing that we find, and there's good evidence, there's an article about this in the Harvard Business Review, success and likability is correlated for men, and it's actually negatively correlated for women. Well, that's a really difficult barrier to go around. So, you know, you're essentially asking me, do you want to be successful or do you want to be liked? Wow. That's the question we're putting in front of people. So I think I find that really difficult too. Another thing that I've heard people talk about, and it's a really interesting one, there's this concept called executive distance, meaning the more you go up, the more you get distanced from the base employees. Mm. While women are identified to be collective and have close personal relationships. So a man and a woman both go to the top level, the executive distance will be perceived as normal for the man, but for the woman, because we expect them to be more nurturing and closer, have close relationships, it will be, you know, perceived much more negatively.
Mm. Well, on that point, I think we're just going on a break now, and we're going to be picking up on female relationships and workplace after this.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So picking up on those points about what the idea is between female leaders and obviously having that nurturing role and working with other women and especially lower down in the organization. I mean, this is a really key point that I think that, and it's always kind of a contentious one, is that when it comes to Queen Bee syndrome, I found from when we're looking at studies and also when you see it in the workplace, that there seems to be actually quite a negative attitude, though, actually from women as well, not just men towards the women leadership and calling them the queen bees, but this kind of mistrust, this mutual mistrust from the colleagues that are maybe below in terms of seniority of the woman leader. What's the real deal behind that kind of toxic negative attitude between the women at the bottom and then the women at the top? Doesn't that foster that kind of behaviour as well?
Yeah, well, for me personally, and I have experienced more positivity between women in my career than not. That's not to say, of course, that it doesn't exist. You know, I hate that kind of premise. Well, I've never experienced it, so it can't exist, but which happens a lot, especially when it comes to diversity. And sometimes with women, you know, it's a case of, well, I've got really to a really senior position, and I haven't experienced any issues, so I don't know what you guys are banging on about, which is so disappointing, because it's just because you haven't, or you haven't seen yourself experiencing it, doesn't mean that other women don't, which is a bit unfortunate. But I've kind of found that other women have been incredibly supportive, and it's been down to very much a kind of individual basis. I've had some great men bosses, I've had some really poor men bosses, and likewise. But I don't know if you have, you probably have some intellectual, I'm sure, theory, but that's my experience.
I will agree too. I didn't have a queen bee challenge in my personal life. I do also think we are being really harsh on these women, because we know that both men and women are equally harsh on junior women. But I think when a woman manager does it, it's seen as more of a stab in the back, right? You're one of us. Why are you really taking this stance? Another thing is, I think we're being harsh on them because I suspect it's really lonely up there. So, you know, not only are they fighting against men, they are fighting against a lot of unconscious bias, a lot of conscious bias. They're trying to figure out who they are. We all try to figure out who we are as we go up the ladder. And they're in the spotlight because there's just so few of them. So I thought about this when I was coming here. And I said, as a junior woman, how would I deal with it? And I realized I actually wouldn't spend a lot of time thinking about the queen bees in my organization if there were some. What I would spend time on is, which ones are the women that seem to be supporting the junior ones? Which ones are the ones that seem to be signing up for mentorship and, more importantly, sponsorship programs, right? Which are the ones that seem to be really gung-ho about having events that help the junior? That's what I really would put my energy in. And I suspect this also will send a signal to the possible queen bees that actually, if you do support the juniors, there is a return for you in that process. You get better recognition, you get better support. Maybe it pays to be nice. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, I think there's that, you know, I think it's also in terms of getting ahead, it's seen as positive to be a mentor and to be championing other women. You know, there's that, you know, obviously the famous Madeleine Albright quote, there's a special place in hell for women who don't help other women. And I think that over the last number of years, you know, women, because there's more of us in business, see the benefits. And in terms of, you asked earlier about, you know, a practical kind of tip, you know, to kind of help each other and get your voice heard. I read an article that Sue Unerman and I think it's Catherine Jacobs, and they wrote the Glass Wall. And it was a practical tips to getting your voice heard, because often it starts with that, doesn't it? And one of the things is get a wing woman or a wing man, but typically a wing woman. So if you, we've all been in a meeting where you say something, you have an idea, and you know, silence, and the next minute John says it, and it's like, John, that's a great idea, and you're like, what? Am I going crazy? And you know,
all been there.
Yeah. And Sue and Catherine's tip was get a wing woman, where if you do say a point, go, well, you know, I think Leanna's point was really valid. Can we just listen to that again? So you're working with each other to kind of, you know, get your voice heard. And I think that's something, you know, if we all work together. And I was at an event yesterday on, you know, on Monster Confidence, an event we do here and in the UK. And the lady was like, can we all, you know, support each other? You know, that's the key thing. And in the presentations we were given to young girls, it's young girls we do these confidence workshops for. My kind of big point was, you know, be confident, you know, not arrogant. Know you, that you can be vulnerable, but be kind to yourself. But also please be kind to each other, because, you know, we really are, you know, a lot stronger kind of working together. And that's men and women, you know, that's so I think, yeah, that's a point I would make.
Yeah, when it comes to mentoring, I do think that there's been a lot more, even just in the last 10 years, opportunities and understanding on mentorship and sponsorship than there's ever been before. I've probably, like, which I'm super grateful for. Even the other day, I had a mentoring session, and that was my first one that I've had. Yet very early in my career, I didn't. And I find that's quite interesting, because usually it's like the other way around. But I think that, you know, when it comes to mentoring, there's always something more to learn. Are you seeing a huge crop up in these kind of understanding and mentorship programs and things like that? Or has it always been there, but we just haven't given it enough attention?
There are mentorship programs At CAST, what we did is last year we surveyed all CAST women. This is students, alumni, staff, to understand what they considered to be a successful career, what they considered as organizational and personal barriers, and how we could help. Mentorship came out quite high. Having said that, a lot of the conversation between people who work in this field is we need more sponsorship. Mentorship is great, and it helps you. You have a sounding board. It helps you realize you're not alone. They can give you very good career tips. But at the end of the day, you're still responsible for moving on. Sponsorship means somebody is going to get up and say, this person needs to go up. And I'm fully behind that. And we really need that push. We need to find these people who are willing to stand behind a woman and say, she needs to go up and do this. And a lot of these sponsors can very much be men because they are in positions of power. They find a woman they think is really good. But I, as much as I like mentorship, and I think it's incredibly valuable, I think if we're talking about progression and getting more women to the top, I will argue that we need more sponsorship.
Yeah, I would kind of argue we probably need both, because I think we did some research at Monster as well, and it's really interesting. One of the key things that young generations, men and women wanted was mentorship, and we absolutely need that sponsorship as well. But it was interesting, coming back to that whole confidence piece, is that what was interesting was young women and men, well, young women were very confident to speak up in meetings, you know, very confident to share new ideas. But when it came to asking for a pay rise, they were not confident at all. So, like, this is the second wave of this research. The first wave, 71% of the young women were not confident. Now, that was compared to the guys who were a lot more confident. And this wave, which is a bit worrying, 87% of young women weren't confident to ask for a pay rise. So it's kind of, I think when it comes to the mentorship and the kind of practical tips that you mentioned, it's that kind of, you know, I'm having a problem, and the mentor can go, okay, well, this is how you should approach it. Try this, try that, and then go away and tell me how you get on. Okay, so it's kind of showing people that if you approach things differently or if you could take control, you can make an impact. And that is so empowering. You know, I had a mentor and he showed me, a guy, that I can like not control, but certainly influence things. And whenever you're a young person, that is like the most incredible insight you can have, that you can influence. So mentorship and sponsorship, absolutely, I agree, are so critical.
I'll say something that we were really surprised with. So one of our colleagues at CAS, Amanda Goodall, did some research. And, well, the title of the research is explanatory, Women Do Ask. Mm. So what they found is that actually women do ask, but they don't get.
Yeah.
So even apart from the issue that a lot of women don't ask, among the ones who do ask, they disproportionately get rejected. Mm-hmm. It's really problematic, but I think mentorship and sponsorship have complementary roles. I think one of them is really to help you through, and the other one is to send the organization a signal that you should be going through. That's how I kind of look at it.
Yeah, and of course, it's really interesting in terms of applying for jobs. We all know that kind of famous stat that a man will apply if he has 60% of the skills, whereas a woman will only apply if she has 100. And people for a long time were like, well, that's a lot down to confidence. However, I saw an article recently, which was, it's not that women don't feel confident. You know, I think we're more quietly confident. Yeah, I could step up. It'll be a learning curve. But what this article was basically saying was that women are being taught to follow the rules. And if it says essential and we don't have it, then we just count ourselves out. Because this is how we're socialized. It's, you know, do the right thing, you know, follow the rules, be a good girl, don't show off. And it's very hard to kind of get rid of those shackles of, you know, I'm being a bit of a maverick here. So one of the things is, you know, don't follow the rules. Those rules were not meant for you. So don't follow them.
And in the exact same vein, I mean, with those job ads as well, isn't it just another thing that just seems to be shutting women out in terms of some of those positions, especially the senior ones that have essential or certain wording and things like that? I mean, is that another barrier that, you know, enables that kind of criteria.
I mean, suspect actually you have more to say on this, but a lot of organizations are becoming quite aware that the wording of their job ads is very gender specific, right? And so I think you're right. There are so many subliminal messages in that whole process. Another thing is, how do you really get jobs at the highest levels? Mm-hmm. You don't really apply. You see a job ad and apply for it.
They're not advertised.
You have a strong network, and you know Joe or Mary or whoever tells you that there's this job coming up, and maybe you should keep your eye out for it. Well, women do not have as strong networks as men do. So,
because I think whenever you become maybe a CEO or you kind of join a company and you're building your team, you kind of want to, you know, build a team that you trust and know can do the job. Now, historically, more men have been in positions. Historically, more men have been in senior positions. So for that kind of level of comfort, you're going to bring guys across more than, you know, women, which isn't necessarily the right thing. But it's just, and I guess this is where you have hope. Because the more women, you know, become more senior, become more involved, then this will change. Now, will it change fast enough? No. Do things need to be happening? Yes. And, you know, Amali D'Alves, who's CEO of Code First Girls, she likens it really well. She says it's like a seesaw where one side is, you know, very heavily skewed. You know, it's totally the opposite. You don't change that seesaw. You don't become level by putting the same weight on both sides. So you have to kind of put initiatives in place to address this whole kind of issue of, you know, gender equality and progression, which is why, you know, we do need to do something. We can't just wait for, you know, eventually we'll get there. It's too late.
And talking about, you know, women in tech or what's happening in tech, something that's really interesting is that Amazon, I think, just announced last week that they have dropped an AI code because it was biased towards men. So we have women who are not predominantly in tech, meaning they don't really balance it. And now we are talking about technologies that seem to select men because that's the data they have been built on. So we're looking at a very, very potentially dangerous picture, because think about the fact that we may be going into job interviews, probably much at the lower level, where almost all of it is weeded out through technology up front. You don't even get a chance to meet the person during the interview process. So if that software is biased, you've lost the game before you even entered it.
Yeah, so we do a lot of work in tech. So I'm part of the Tech Town Charter, which I co-founded with a collective of women. And I just love having, I met some amazing women, and there hasn't been, you know, any queen bees in that situation. We've all worked together to create something. 17% of the workforce are in tech or female, that's all. And, you know, these biases, you know, if you're a guy and you're writing code, you code through your own lens. And of course, there's the famous example of Apple when it first launched its health kind of app. You know, that's, you know, come standard in each iPhone. You know, it had all the kind of different things of the body, heart rate, all that kind of stuff. But the one thing that was missing was the menstruation kind of monthly cycle, because the guys that were doing it were all men, and they don't think about periods because it's not part of their kind of lens. And I think the whole kind of point, certainly for tech, is, you know, if you don't have a diverse team, you're going to miss out on so many things. And I've seen some of the arguments that, you know, if you have a diverse team, you have a mediocre team. It's not about lowering the bar to kind of, you have a mediocre team because you are not seeing different problems and identifying them and then coming up with the solutions. So tech, which is shaping the world, it's so critical that we get more diversity in there. So that's something we all have to focus on. And the Tech Talent Charter is one of those kind of organizations that's working with folks to try and do that.
Yeah. I was at Mobile World Congress, and there was a certain car company, and they were talking about trying to make it more diverse in order the engineers and everything. So they found out, you know, years ago that actually the airbags that they would use in their car would protect the men if they crashed, but would actually hurt women, because not understanding the difference in the female body compared to the men would be fine if the airbag went off, but actually for the women it was, you know, they crushed their rib cage, it would break their arms. So that's so true. But going into the leadership side of it, what was really interesting, I read this kind of, I suppose, essay from a VP at Facebook. And she was brought up another kind of intersectional point about female leadership, especially in something like tech, is about that kind of neurodiversity, personality diversity that is not very prevalent, especially in non-tech areas, but in tech where there's a lot more methodical, more data-driven professionals, when they start rising up the top, it's the louder ones, it's the more overtly confident women especially that seem to break through that, you know, proverbial glass ceiling, whereas it's kind of difficult if you actually great at your job, but you don't talk about it more. I mean, what's the kind of, you know, the navigation that maybe a more introverted leader could, well, would-be leader go for? Do they have to change themselves?
I will argue that that's not only a problem in tech. And this is, I will say this as an experience as a professor at CAS. I teach in the executive MBA program. So these are people who have great functional expertise and now are preparing themselves for leadership roles. It's a huge switch, no matter what function you're in, because what you're asked to do at the lower levels is to be quite specialized, go quite deep, be quite technical. And when you're going towards leadership, now you're getting asked to be much more driven by communication, by not only creating vision, but explaining that vision, making people believe in that vision. So I think in any kind of job, what you're prepared for at the lower levels is not exactly what is required of you at the higher levels. And we know there's a lot of top managers who are great functional specialists, but I'm not quite sure they are actually great leaders. They don't seem to have the interpersonal and communication skills.
Mm. No, I would agree. And I think one of the things that has been said about why women don't get to senior leadership positions across all industries is the fact that, you know, we may work really, really hard and we expect people to acknowledge that and see that. We don't say how our work impacts the bottom line. And for those introverted people in tech or indeed across the board, is it an extrovert or introvert thing? I think it's a kind of behavior which is you've got to tell people the impact that your skills and talent has on the organization. You know, you can't expect them, you know, you in an ideal world, they should see all the hard work and effort you put in, but they're busy. You know, it's the onus is on you. This is a very male behavior to go, hi, I did that marketing campaign, sales are up 10% in Germany. Whereas for, you know, that's just not natural for us. It has to be natural. So a practical tip for current leaders is if you have a team, is to kind of ask each and every one of them, what impact have you made in a positive way? So they don't feel uncomfortable. It's just a natural way of kind of communicating, because the loudest voice in the room who brags and says everything will always go, well, you've done all that great stuff. I'll promote you next time. So it's kind of, how can we put that kind of, you know, cause and effect and teach folks who are introverted to kind of go, don't feel uncomfortable by it. It's just part of the process, and enable them to kind of share that in a least painful way, because I know it's quite painful for people to kind of go, hey, I'm amazing.
Well, I think that is a great and empowering message to end on. I just want to thank you both for joining us today on this podcast. Listeners, don't leave yet. Don't forget, you can find show notes and helpful articles under the Work and Management channel on uk.finance.yahoo.com. And if you like this episode, please rate, subscribe, and tell your friends about us. And while you're at it, download the Yahoo Finance app for unparalleled access to data and alerts on the go.
Yahoo Finance presents It's a Jungle Out There, produced by Liana Brinded and Caitlin Mercer. Recorded, edited, and mixed by Lolita Laguna. And music by Gregory Moore.